Welcome back to Evolution of Snake. I'm Zach.
And I am Madeline.
And we are nearing the end of our End of an Era's recap. This is episode 5 we're going to be talking about today. But before we get into that, you might notice that I'm wearing a shirt that says The Snares Tour. Oh, that's convenient because The Snares Tour is actually ending in Australia in February. We had to add a second Melbourne show due to overwhelming demand. And so you need to go and get tickets to see us in Melbourne. Sydney meet and greets are gone and general tickets are running low. Brisbane, again, we have some special things on the horizon for you. So evolutionofasnake.com to get your tickets now. And if you want to see all our unedited, unfiltered reactions to the End of an Era series, patreon.com/riftologist.
It's all there for you waiting. It could all be yours.
It's not a lot of issues going on in the evolution of the snake world.
It's not a lot of issues going on. Thank you so much.
It's a lot of blessings going on.
Exactly.
Period. Well, Madeline, you are leading us through this recap today. Tell us, what was this episode about?
So episode 5 is called Marjorie. So right then and there, you know what we're going to be talking about. This episode was really heavily focused on family. The episode opens with Marjorie and Taylor together at the piano in an old home video. And Taylor is banging the hell out of those ivories. You could tell even then that the talent was fomenting. And Marjorie says to Andrea, you know you're going to have to get a piano now. And Andrea's like, really? And Marjorie's like, yes. And then Cowboy Like Me needle drop with the title card. You can't make this up. I love the way that they've been repurposing instrumental songs for the documentary. This is one of my favorite ones. Marjorie and Taylor, Cowboy Like Me. The layers to it and the levels, it got me. I said, I'm already done. I don't know if I can continue forward.
Having enough of your own music to have it soundtrack a 6-episode docuseries of every emotion imaginable is like a true accomplishment. And this reached a peak in the next episode, which I am recapping. But you're right, Cowboy Like Me is cuckoo.
It's cuckoo bananas. And they were right. They've been right with every needle drop. Not a single needle drop out of place. I'm saying it. So we go back to Toronto, Canada. Now, remember, this is the second to last set of Era shows. And we see fans taking pictures in front of the inflatable friendship bracelets and trading bracelets and taking pictures and hand-harding. While inside, Taylor is coughing up a lung as she tries to rehearse surprise songs. She staggers and coughs her way over to a table set up with flowers and cold brew. And she asks her mom if she wants a coffee from the world's most depressing coffee shop. I wouldn't. Who knows what's on those paws?
Not
you want
for
a coffee?
Me.
You want a coffee? Mm-mm. No, good.
Thank you.
I guess you're just used to it. The thing is, if you're Andrea or you're pretty much anybody who's like in her immediate space all the time, you're already sick. It's over.
It's done for it's you. Over. It's like
you've
working
got
in a daycare.
The cold. Right, you've exactly. So Andrea drops this question on Taylor. Have you ever heard of spatchcocking a turkey? And Taylor gets this look on her face that I can only describe as like knowing. Like, I knew you were going to bring up some bullshit about the turkey at Thanksgiving. I knew eventually this was going to come up. And then they start dropping this like classic white American Thanksgiving lore about, remember the time we deep fried the turkey and we set the lawn on fire? What's the deal?
I couldn't believe they did that. I thought that was like no offense, hick people behavior.
Oh no, they're all
and
doing
these
it.
These are not people. The hick people.
Well, let me tell you, they got a little bit of that dog in them because they have done it. My family, if I may speak boldly, has never done it, and we never would. We know.
Well, it's dangerous. It's not. It's not a smart thing to do.
No, it's not. So Taylor
also
asked Andrea.
Taylor knew it was heirloom turkey crumbs. She was acting. She was like, I know what you're talking about, Andrea.
You want to spatchcock the turkey?
She was like, I haven't done that, but I've done many worse things.
For those of you who don't know, spatchcocking a turkey, if you've never seen it, it's actually crazy. You like kind of like rip it so that it's like laying flat. Like it's like I can't even explain it.
As a non-meteor, that's absolutely disgusting to me.
Despicable, especially for thinking about spatchcocking a certain turkey. I mean, let's just open
we need to pardon the turkey and kill the humans.
Yes, and I've been saying this for years. It's like the crazy pita ad. How would you like it if you were roasted? I'd love it.
I wouldn't.
So Taylor asks Andrea if she can, quote, make those big ribs for Travis. And of course, the head Tavis was already planning on making those big ribs for Travis, and they are the one he refers to as dinosaur bones. Of course he's interested in that. A giant hunk of meat on a bone.
Despicable. Nothing I have ever learned about Travis Kelce has surprised me. Every single time I hear of him saying or doing something, I'm like, that sounds about right.
That sounds just about right. So I enjoyed this kind of like brief, addendum to the episode. But then we get into the real meat of the matter. Taylor says, touring is something that really kind of brings my family together in a lot of ways. For me, part of the Eras Tour is a celebration of my family. Ultimately, I just don't see any of this happening if all of my family hadn't been involved. And to kind of back this up, we get to see some old clips of things like Austin bringing Taylor water while she's on stage, Andrea brushing her hair to get her ready to go on stage when she's like 10, 11 years old. And Taylor says, we're kind of a family business for 20 years. Now, I've been seeing a lot of commentary on the old World Wide Web about Taylor's relationship with her family is weird. Isn't this so weird? No, yeah.
How?
Yeah.
What's weird about that?
Why does she need her mommy? It's like, okay.
Are you joking?
I'm serious. You can't wield your personal mommy issues like a sword against the entire world. I know you're hurting, but it's not Taylor Swift's fault. I'm sorry, girl.
It's
like,
so
you can't be doing
true.
That. And you
it's
know
like
what?
Your There's... reality is not everyone's reality. I think people exactly. have forgotten that now. They're like, if your life isn't like mine, then you're out of touch. And it's like, well, actually, you are, because you're expecting everybody to live the way that you live.
And the other thing is that like, so there are so many celebrities who don't have this kind of a support system. And we've seen what it looks like when that can happen. So the reason that Taylor is the way that she is because of this support system that she has. So like, you can look down your nose at it all you want. Maybe you think it's weird because you don't have a close relationship with your family, but it's like, it's worked for her. I think we can all
agree.
Well,
it's a stability that I understand why people get touchy about it, because I think like seeing a really, really happy family can be triggering to some people, but it's actually, we should really be saying, wow, isn't it nice? And shouldn't it be normal that everybody can have relationships like this with their family? Like that's the ideal situation, right?
Right, but instead people are hurting. And you know what?
And throwing tomatoes.
I don't know if you guys knew this. Hurt people hurt people.
Hurt dogs holler.
Yep, exactly. So continuing on with this line of thought, quote, my parents didn't know anything about the music industry, but they were like, yeah, it's hard. Yeah, we'll get some books and read about it. And I couldn't help but thinking of like what kind of books they bought. And I was like, becoming a pop icon for dummies. What are the
it
books?
Was also just such a specific set of circumstances of what Taylor was trying to do. Right. It was like, how do I make an 11-year-old Britney Spears but not sexualized and a songwriter? Right. I don't think there is a book about that.
No. And you know what? If you look at the people who, like the women specifically, who had like come before Taylor, it's hard to remember this because we're in the era of post-Taylor. So now everything looks a little bit different. But before Taylor, there wasn't really somebody quite exactly like her. Her in the mainstream in that like 5-year period before she was really starting to gear up to be Taylor Swift. Just interesting.
She was the first.
So we see a clip from the Fearless Tour of Andrea drawing the 13 on. I really like to see it.
Hand heart.
I wish that we had Andrea to do our 13s because our 13s. We, well, you needed
her.
Been-
you really needed her. You especially. Madeline needed. My 13s were mostly okay, but Madeline had some busted 13s.
Listen, and I'm always trying my best. That's a fucked up thing, and it's not fair. I don't have an Andrea.
Well, you have a tiny hand also, so it's you don't have as much real estate.
No, I don't have the canvas to do Mm-mm. these beautiful 13s. Taylor Swift can play a 12-string guitar, so she's got a paw that is perfect for drawing these massive 13s. So there you go. But it was tears. It was memory lane. Taylor says... In an industry as cutthroat as the music industry, learning hard lessons and experiencing ups and downs and triumphs and failures, it was a huge challenge for my whole family. But everybody was so locked in for my whole life. They all banded together to be like, no, she wants this, so we want this for her. Must be nice.
There was a lot of sacrifice involved. In when you have to focus all your attention on one member of the family, it's a miracle that they are as close as they are and that they enjoy spending as much time together as they do. Because, you know, I always think about Austin particularly. It's like you could grow up to be really resentful of that position. You could be Rob Kardashian. But instead, in this world, you can be an Austin Swift or a Rob Kardashian. And Austin Swift chose to be himself.
I think he's really happy being a behind-the-scenes guy. who just like does all the stuff. Act.
What are you talking about? He was kissing Draco Malfoy. Don't forget that.
Lest we forget, but after that experience, he said, you know what? It's not for not me. For also, me. We can't forget about Jack Leppard and the Dolphin Club.
I forgot, and I'm not going to remember.
And we're not remembering. We're not no. remembering. So Andrea said, quote, this tour is an honor to work on. It's a real privilege, and we know that because none of us would be doing anything that we're really good at doing if it wasn't for what she does, which she's incredibly good at doing. And I think that's a really good way to look at it. It's like, I'm Andrea Swift. I'm in the situation that I'm in right now because of Taylor. Austin Swift. I'm in the situation right now because of Taylor. So I think it's not been without its gifts and rewards.
That's true. And also, she doesn't lord it over people's heads. You can see this in how she interacts with her family. Like, she never is instructing them or telling them what to do. And also, when you see her with her dancers, something they keep saying is, you always say we. You don't say me. And she very well could say me because it is all because of her. And yet, she has a team spirit.
She has a team spirit. And you know what? She knows there's no I in team. Thank God. Thank God. And Taylor says, mostly it's a way for us to come together as a family and sort of honor this thing we've committed our entire lives to. Or actually, Andrea said that. Sorry, guys. I'm always doing that.
Well, either of them could have said it.
Either of them could have said it. Sorry. Andrea said that. And I realized that after I read it. It's so interesting to hear the way that they talk about it. Like, I've never really thought about it this way, to honor this thing that we've committed our entire lives to, like what the Eras Tour meant to Andrea and Scott and Austin and other members of her family and other close people in her circle who have been working on her career essentially since the beginning of it. Like, getting to see this spectacle, I think, is as revelatory and as celebratory for them as it was for Taylor. I never thought about that before.
And for us too. I mean, Andrea is a fan. You see her at a show, she's locked the hell in. She's sitting there staring at Taylor, singing the words. She's not on her phone. She's dancing with fans sometimes, but she's like paying attention. And she's seen these shows how many times has she heard Love Story?
Yeah. You'd think she'd get sick of it. No, she doesn't get sick of it. I love it. I absolutely love it. So after this, you know, great little scene, we go back to rehearsing her surprise songs. And of course she starts talking about how the song Us featuring Gracie Abrams, or excuse me, it's actually Us by Gracie Abrams featuring Taylor Swift. It got nominated for a Grammy. So they start talking about that. And then we see some home footage of Gracie and Taylor making the song Us together. Everybody has seen this footage. They're a little tipsy. They're setting things on fire and using the fire extinguisher. It's a cute, fun little clip of them, you know, hanging out at home, having too many glasses of wine.
Doing what they think is amazing.
I wish that were me. Oh, they are in the clip. Like, we are writing the next great American breakup song. Mm-hmm. Good for you. I mean, that's how you have to think of it.
That was us in the bizarre, I licked it so it's mine, Airbnb, editing our show before the DC. Because DC Taylor announced her master's and we were like, we're going to completely change the show. This was us. We were like, it's going to be revolutionary.
It was like the Situation Room. Unfortunately, we didn't have any wine. We were eating like Trader Joe's snacks, but as we should.
High on our own supply.
Yeah, high on our very own supply. So Gracie comes on screen. She gets her little talking moment. And she talks about how Taylor wanted to mash up Out of the Woods with us. And Gracie is gagging. Because she loves Out of the Woods. She says it's in her top three songs ever of all time. Gracie listens to a voice memo that Taylor sends her of her idea for the mashup. And Gracie gags hard for that too. And then she gags extra hard after she listens to it, sitting at her piano, because she's trying to learn how it's going to go and like figure out what Taylor's talking about. And she expresses a lot of anxiety over it and nerves because she's never done anything like that before. And she says how impressed and gagged she is that Taylor can just like come up with that. Again, this is Taylor being like, you can do that, right? And her friends are being like, yes,
of course
I can. Yes, of course I can do it. And of course they always can. It's a matter of believing in them. She knows that they can do
and
it.
She does, and, by God, inherently.
And she does inherently. She knows that Gracie can do that. And she did. And she did. So there you go.
And it wasn't that hard. So we'll talk about that later.
So Taylor rehearses the other surprise song. And I thought that this part was really interesting because she's rehearsing Evermore. And then it just like becomes Peter. And even she seems surprised by it. Like, she wasn't sure yet if that was what it was going to be. And she just like came up with it as she was playing it. And she goes, Evermore and Peter, Jesus. Yeah. What were you thinking?
What were you thinking? Who asked you to do that?
It's like, did you literally not know when you woke up this morning what it was going to be? Maybe she knew she was going to do Evermore. But then she was like, no, what the hell am I going to play with it? Forgive me, Peter. My last fearless leader. All right,
to someone, that was everything.
For someone, that was everything. To Andrea, it was everything. Andrea says she couldn't do what Taylor does if her life depended on it because there was never a creative bone in her body. And they show this clip from, like, the Fearless era where she's got a mandolin that Taylor's supposed to be signing to, like, sell for charity, I think. And she's, like, fucking with it and messing with it. It had me in tears.
That killed me.
I was like, okay, that girl, was so go funny. Off. Go off. So Andrea says, I don't have a musical background or play instruments, but I do have this sort of intimate knowledge of the psyche of someone who really has to do this. And it goes back to my mother, Marjorie. And we get to see all of these clips and pictures of Marjorie. And of course, Marjorie looks like Taylor. Like, they're related. Of course, they look like each other. But there's this particular picture of her with the white gloves on and her beautiful gown looking up. And she looks exactly like Taylor. It freaks me out. It's like the
I've never
the
seen a picture of them that looked that alike. I actually didn't think they looked that alike before I saw that specific photo. And I was like, wow.
Wow.
Also, fun fact, a lot of those clips of Marjorie were in Singapore.
Period. Lest we forget. I forgot about this piece of lore.
Andrea Swift grew up in Singapore. I'm pretty sure, don't quote me, that one of Marjorie's biggest shows or first performances of opera or whatever was in a very historic theater in Singapore that's still open to this day.
And we need to go there on a fact-finding mission and see if there's any
I've already prayed. Memorabilia. I've already been there and done
there's nothing. Damn. Mm-mm. So Andrea talks about how Marjorie married her dad and they started moving around the world. And wherever they'd wind up, Marjorie would star in local operas. And everywhere they went, she was absolutely beloved. Many such cases for the Swift family. Many such cases. Andrea says that her and her sister were often brought along to Marjorie's performances. And Andrea recalls that Marjorie would ask her, what did you think about this? And what did you think about that? And how did that make you feel? And Andrea would be like, sure. She's like 8 years old in the backseat, like, I loved it, mommy. So Marjorie was always looking for feedback. And Andrea described it as how she knew when she'd go see her mom. She knew after the fact she would have a job to do and to pay attention because she was going to be asked about it on the way home, which I thought was really interesting for her to be thinking, like, I have a job to do. There's something that I'm included in with my mother's performance. It's not me performing. It's her talking to me after the fact and me giving her notes and giving her feedback and talking to her about the performance. I thought that was very interesting because if you think about it, it's kind of the same.
It is interesting. It reminded me of that New Yorker profile, you know, the accidentally too revealing one that made Taylor never want to work with them again during the Speak Now era, where they kind of profiled Taylor working in a day. And I remember specifically they were doing the Speak Now tour DVD. And Andrea was like low-key irate about the way that it had been shot or it had been cut together. And Taylor had looked at it and been like, I don't like it. Mom, you fix it. And Andrea went through and made all the notes and sent it back to the director. So I think when you're the creative, you try and focus on the big picture stuff, and having people like Andrea around you that have trained themselves to like notice the small things that you don't have time to pay attention to is immensely helpful.
Period. Exactly. That's the exact kind of thing that I think Andrea learned from living with Marjorie. And you know what? Invisible string needle drop. It didn't happen. But if it had happened, I
needed.
Needed. So Andrea says, exactly. Andrea says it was a beautiful relationship I had with my mom. But it was all with a full awareness that my mom was this person who loved singing, who loved to perform, and that people love. So it began with my mother. And I think that that probably prepared me better than anything could have for having a child like Taylor, who pretty much wanted to follow in my mother's footsteps. And we see old footage of Taylor talking about songs she's written, getting ready to perform them. She's like, you know, 12, 13, 14. I'll tell you something. We need to be streaming One-Sided Goodbye right now. Whatever One-Sided Goodbye is, I want to hear it. It's
Bring
probably
it
another Smoky Black Nights, but
I'd love to hear
care.
It.
You know, back in the day with those old unreleased Taylor songs, I didn't care. I would have listened to her singing from a toilet. I did not care.
The titles were also always so much better than the material. Smoky right. Black Nights is a great title. And then,
well, it was
needle drop.
And the torture started. Needle drop. And then they start talking about the story everybody has heard. If you've been a Swiftie since 2007, 8, 9, doesn't matter. You have heard the story at least a dozen times. At 11 is when Taylor looked at me and said, we got to go to Nashville. Golly, I've heard the story way too many damn times. We got to go to Music Row. This is where Faith Hill went, et cetera, et cetera. She wanted to go to Nashville, and they were right to go to Nashville. Andrea says, very quickly, I realized this is where my past with my mother was really going to come into play. I think Taylor wanted to experience something that she thought was, I hate to say the word, but destiny.
No, I said say it.
That, say it!
I said say it say louder. It! No, invisible strength, say destiny. It was fated. It was
the prophecy.
Fated. The prophecy. I do think that at a very young age, we tend to know where we're going in life. And at this point, we see a clip of Taylor performing where? At the Bluebird Cafe.
Some of us have set their boots,
literally our boots, in the hallowed halls of the Bluebird Cafe.
Some of us ended up in the Washington Post because we went to
the Bluebird Cafe. We were in the Washington Post. Listen, we said, we heard a little birdie told us... And we got in big trouble, but we were there.
We did.
We were there.
So our outcomes of going to the Bluebird Cafe were different, but we both went there and something big happened.
And something very big happened for both of us. So open the case. So absolutely, Gorgina. I love this part. And then randomly, we're going home with Amanda. We're going home with Amanda. And we go to her home in Toronto. She lives in Toronto.
I was asleep at this point.
She shows us her like crazy old dance memorabilia that proves she's the biggest dance nerd that ever lived. And she says, I think you have to have a certain personality to tour. It's one thing to be a dancer or a musician, but it's another thing to handle what a tour entails. And it's not for everybody, but it was always for me. I loved being on the road. My whole life, it was my dream to tour like this. But then she reveals that after this tour, her dance career is coming to an end. We have to cheer. What a tour to end on. If I was on the Eras tour and I was thinking about maybe retiring, I'd be like, this is the time because it's never going to get better than this. So let's just close the
book. I don't know how it gets better than this.
Exactly. And then we see some stuff with Amanda and her family, which I think like they mean to tie it into talks about how just like Taylor always knew she wanted to sing and write songs, Amanda always knew she wanted to be a dancer. So it's show night. And Amanda is doing the pre-show huddle speech. And she says, quote, as we go into these last few shows, I can't help but think that this is potentially the last time that I will ever do this in front of my family and friends. I think we all know how rare and special opportunities like this are. And Tay, you are all things kindness and all things grace. And absolutely, my life is different from now moving forward because of you. And I thought it was cute that Taylor said, Amanda, you're my favorite pop star. It's like, oh, that's...
And she is. Very. They show her doing the Bad Blood strut, and I was like, you ate that the fuck up. As everybody knows, that's my favorite choreography of the entire tour.
She ate it.
Them walking.
She ate it. So we go on stage, and as Amanda's performing, you know, this is one of the last times she's ever going to perform like this. We get to see Amanda's parents and family watching her perform on a stage like this for maybe the last time ever. I thought that Bad Blood was an interesting choice for this emotional moment. But sure.
Yeah, we got prep. Yep.
And I thought it was sweet. So then we get back to, you know, the meat of the matter. Andrea says, quote, for Taylor, it's always been about the audience, making sure that she felt an intimate connection with them, meeting people, talking to them, hugging them. And we see clips of the old days that are never coming back when she could do things like that on the Fearless Tour, walk through the crowd, hug the babies, kiss the babies. Oh, I'm out here. Speak Now Tour, Red Tour, et cetera, et cetera. So that's great. It's nice to reflect on the memories. But everybody intimately understands why that cannot be the case anymore, I think. So we don't
need
to
get
into that. We all know. Mm-hmm. Andrea says, with the Eras Tour, that could no longer be possible because of COVID and the risks that are brought to everybody backstage. Having this shut down would be a disaster. And not a single lie told, but let's open the case on
that.
More reality. Let's say.
Didn't we say that?
Yeah, we've always said it. We've always said it. I feel like we knew from the first Eras Tour
before
show.
Before it happened.
Fans. Like, we knew that that was not going to be part of it. And it's like, even if she could, it's fucking 3.5 hours, brother.
She's dead. Yeah. She's literally dead afterwards. She barely has time to, even in the last episode where she's coming off stage and giving everyone a hug and having a glass of champagne, she almost immediately gets into her car and takes her boots off. Like, she needs to stop. And the fans, like, those meet and greets after the show, that takes 2-3 hours. Like, she doesn't just come in and go, hi, bye. It's like, she sits, she talks. It's amazing to me that she did it for however many shows she did it for however long. Like, it is having done meet and greets ourselves, Madeline, on a very small scale, after the show, we always say it's the worst. You're so exhausted after it's done.
Yeah, There was no way that was going to happen. It wasn't going to happen. So I had no issue with it. I don't think anybody has really brought it up since the very beginning. Nobody's talking about that.
No, especially because the 22 hat moment kind of replaced meeting fans.
So Taylor says, quote, "I decided that if I couldn't meet fans in the crowd, in the show, then I have to come up with different ways to still give people an intimate experience." This is when we meet Ethan Tobman, who is the production designer who's worked with Taylor on music videos like the Cardigan video and the Fortnite video, but he also worked on the tour. And he shows us some of his original storyboard ideas for parts of the show, which are pretty interesting to see. It's interesting to see like the idea become like the real thing. And then he talks about making people in the last row feel like they're in the first row. And one way he says that they did that was by making the floor of the stage a giant video screen that everybody can see. And then additionally having a camera fly overhead of the stage so that the people on the floor can see the stage screen as well. And it was just kind of like really interesting to think about all of the little details that they thought of to make the show as immersive for everybody in the stadium as possible. Probably one of my Eras Tour regrets, like a seat that I didn't get. I wanted to be like dead center at like the back of the stadium, you know, in like a really high seat to like really see the whole thing.
In Singapore, I had not dead center, but kind of left of center. I had the last row in the whole stadium. Like it was the most nosebleed you could ever get. And my experience at the show was so different because the stage really does look amazing from afar. It's almost more like, I think the most interesting seats that you can get are front row or completely back of the house, because front row, you're seeing it all up close. You're seeing Taylor, she's there, but all the way in the back, like just the way the production runs, there are things that you don't see, like even seeing when the crowd goes rainbow for You Need to Calm Down, seeing that from all the way in the back and how all the lights change. It's really cool.
So that's one of my regrets. I wish I would have gotten people think of it as a bad seat. Are there bad seats at the Eras Tour? You tell me.
Put me in the chopper.
Tell me. Put me in the chopper. I want to fly overhead and hover over the stadium. So Taylor also says that they hired a cinematographer on this tour for the first time ever so that they could make sure that the shots on screen are the best possible shots. I thought that was a juicy little tidbit. I didn't know that she never had a cinematographer. I didn't know this was the first time ever. And you know what?
Well, she always has her face on screen. So it's like, I get it. But I think because of how complicated the set was and also the way that they blew her up at specific moments, like it was really cool. It was different every time.
They did a really good job, but we already knew that. And Ethan is the one who came up with Taylor diving into the stage. And we get to see her rehearsing that at the very start of the tour for the first time. And we see how it works. And it's got sensors in it. I always wondered if it did. Around the edges, green means go, red means stop. We know that from our friends at SeatGeek.
who are not sponsoring today's video, but we love them.
So that this part of her rehearsing that, like it was early tour footage, she was just figuring it out, it made me really emotional because I realized we're never gonna see that again. And I was like, that was one of the things on the first night of the show that people went apeshit over. And you know what's really sad is that like at all of my shows, the elation of the surprise song set, I never remembered it. I never thought to like remember her diving. I don't have a single memory of it from any of my shows because I just like blacked out during the surprise song set.
I remember it from London randomly because it was bright. And it was the first time I'd seen her like from above diving in when it was bright because you could kind of see the mattress thing because we were so far up.
Right.
We were basically over the stage.
But that was a good view. That was not a good view.
We had
that
a great view.
Yeah. Little did we know Paul McCartney was down there. And let me tell you, we didn't care.
We knew quickly. And then we said, next.
Next. So Ethan says, great shows make adults feel like children. And I can attest to that. I felt like a child every night at the Eras Tour. I was just 12 years old, weeping my heart out every night.
I'm so depressed after watching this. It's just never going to happen again. And it was everything. I've never been that happy in my life.
I'm going to say it. It was amazing. That first moment in Chicago night one, when she first got on stage, it hits you like a ton of bricks. I still remember that moment so vividly. And what I really remember is Ramen Head in front of me. You will never know peace, sir, with your Justin Timberlake 2003 hair. I'll find you. Mm-hmm. And you're
not knowing any of the words. Well, remember his flag that I snatched out of his hands? Remember? He held his flag up and I went, which? It was a pride leg. And I said, not today. Not today.
No. It may be Pride Month, but not in my house.
He didn't even turn around. He knew that he wasn't going to be able to put that flag back up.
No, everybody behind him was going to get mad. And there were a lot of people back there. You know, there were some people who were drinking. There were some people who would throw hands. So just saying.
I was one of them. No alcohol involved.
I was completely sober. Would have beat your ass, sir. Mm-hmm. So there you go. Andrea says, what we were trying to do with this tour was make it the biggest thing we've ever done. But truthfully, none of it happens without a song and a person up there willing to sing it.
Say it.
This is probably one of my favorite parts of the whole episode is when we get into all of these clips from studio sessions. I was like, yes, yum, 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 yum. We got so many from Reputation that I never thought I would see. I literally was like, this is a cornucopia. I'm at the buffet. I'm gorging myself. I can't stop eating. So first we see a clip from the Rep studio sessions with Martin and Shellback where she's yelling that she loves songs over and over. And it's just like a really funny, cute clip. And as we start to see this montage of studio clips, Taylor says, storytelling for me is one of the key aspects that makes me feel like life is worth living. And crafting a song is just the happiest that I ever am. And we see her doing our song in February 2006 in the studio.
This changed the world.
I can't believe I'm seeing this with my eyes. I can't believe I'm seeing this with my own two eyeballs. And then we see her doing Fearless in the studio from 2007.
We heard that demo.
And then Story of Us in 2010. We've seen that clip before, but it was like a longer version of it. And I was like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm watching this. Taylor says, if you're in a writing session with me, I'll go into my lyric space and it's just sort of like rocking back and forth in a corner, muttering. And guess what we saw at this moment? I prayed for times like these, ready for it, studio sessions. You have no idea what this meant to me. I was like, I really thought I would never get to see that. Ready for it sessions. A lot of them. It was like a long clip in the show. Mm-hmm. I was like, I can't believe I'm watching this. And we got to see that they pan to like a bottle of wine and Taylor's empty wine glass as she's recording Ready for It. I was like,
Mama like you to wine.
We knew that. I was like, I was happy as a clam. I could have died in this moment and been happy. I never thought I would get to see Ready for It studio sessions. It was really special.
Interesting note here. Jack Antonoff not mentioned.
So I mentioned this in my reaction video. And there were a couple of comments.
It was weird that he wasn't there. That's the first time that I felt like it's weird that he's not in this part, especially because Getaway Car is the video that she always uses and would have been appropriate to use here. And yet he's literally excised from it entirely. She's like, I only care about Max and Shellback. That's it.
And it's like, you could make the argument, like maybe she just wanted to lead into Showgirl, but like Jack's not irrelevant. He's him not being in the entire documentary start to finish. It's like he was a part of this. He came on stage multiple times on the Eras Tour. He was a part of the Tortured Poet sessions. Like he was involved in this process for like the 2 years that the Eras Tour was on there, was, you know, going on. So it's like not one mention. It's strange. Somebody said that I'm writing fan fiction. I was like, I'm not writing fan fiction. I'm not writing fan fiction. I'm just posing it to the world. Is it not strange that he wasn't in it even once?
Well, I think it's not fan fiction because we're not assuming anything happened. We don't know. But what I do know is that it's weird that he's not even mentioned at all.
No, not even his name coming up. Weird.
Weird.
I don't smile. I frown.
I don't smile. And I also didn't smile when, you know, because she was really hitting it with me with songwriting is my purpose, my life's work. It's everything to me. And we're looking at Reputation. We're looking at all these great albums. And then the recording session
for canceled. Then the torture started. Now, here's the interesting thing is that, like, let me tell you something, girls. I would watch her make pretty much any song and be glued to the screen. These Showgirl sessions, I was like, I couldn't care less. I think it's because it's so recent. It's like the Reputation sessions is like, I mean, that's like, that album is almost 10 years old. Coming up in 2027, it's going to be 10 years old. Scene debut. These are like the sessions that I want to watch, like these original classic songs. I don't need to see you guys making wood. I don't know. That doesn't interest me.
I don't want to. I wanted to see, I liked Father Figure. I wanted to see that.
Period. I mean, it's interesting to see canceled, like broken down into its parts because like there is some really interesting production on it. And I do think she wanted to make a Reputation moment. We already had it. It's called Elizabeth Taylor. Move on. You know, we didn't need it, But God, the final product, it's like you're sitting there watching it. It was like watching Only the Young. I'll say it.
Exactly. It's just like Miss Americana. The documentaries are actually so similar in the way that they proceed, and also the grand proclamations interspersed with flop footage.
Well, speaking of grand proclamations, Taylor says, quote, making Showgirl while I was on the Eras tour, I was in a place in my life where life felt so full of possibility, and it felt like I was figuring things out. It felt like so romantic and magical and passionate, and I wanted to encapsulate that feeling on this album. Okay, well.
Sure.
We go to a clip of them making Reputation, thank God, and you see Taylor, this killed me, low-key Bleachella hair in her mm-hmm. little hat recording King of My Heart. I was like, I need more, 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 more.
Hat on in the stew.
Hat on in the studio. So then we go back to the Showgirl sessions, unfortunately, and Taylor says, working with Max and Shellback, our relationship is very much like, I feel they've always been mentors and I've always felt like they're apprentice and they are so brilliant. And she always loves to talk about, they make sounds with the weirdest stuff. And we see Shellback like pounding drumsticks on a liquor bottle and like banging his feet on the ground with the little dog to like make noises. Interesting, I guess you could say, but I'd be interested to know how those sounds actually made it onto the album. I don't have that information. So I
was right. Like, otherwise, okay, I'm just looks looking like at adults banging sticks against rocks, yeah. Pots and pans.
Yes. So I did really like the scene in this part of the movie, or not the movie, the documentary, where Taylor is learning about some of like Swedish Christmas culture. They make her like part of a Swedish Christmas celebration, and it's got like spiced wine, nuts. I saw some cookies on the table. Really cute way to kind of like have like a mini Swedish Christmas. I would like to have a Swedish Christmas. I just would like to put that on the table. It looks wonderful. So mm-hmm. if they would like to invite me, I will come over and drink the mulled wine. I'll mm-hmm. eat the nuts. I'll eat the cookies. Thank you so much. But then the grand proclamations started again. Quote, I was really ready for that challenge to go back into the studio with these two people and really try to stretch and challenge myself as much as possible to make hopefully the best album that I could possibly make. Cut to making canceled. You can't
You're losing
make
me.
This
You're
up.
Losing
if
me.
If it was cut to making Elizabeth Taylor, I would have let
sure.
her set it.
Well, even the Fate of Ophelia, it's a big hit. Canceled. Fine.
I can't. You
no,
can't
too...
write this stuff.
She lolcowed
two
herself.
Two times. She said it in Miss Americana, cut to I'm making me. She said it in this documentary, cut to I'm making canceled. It's like, oh my God.
And this idea of like, I'm making something that challenges me. I'm sorry. I know the Life of a Showgirl defenders have been getting really upset with us lately, but like, there's nothing new about the Life of a Showgirl. There's nothing challenging or different about any of that music. There really isn't anything she hasn't done before on that album. And I challenge you to find me something that has been done. Put the lyrics aside. Put the lyrics
aside.
And let's talk about the music.
Period. So there you have it. That's kind of, I was watching this scene and I said, go back to Reputation sessions. Mm-hmm. Honestly, and it's not even a matter, because there was a time when Lover was my least favorite Taylor album. Show me those sessions. I'd watch those with rapt attention. But
the Cruel Summer session needs to come out of the vault now.
Yeah, we need the St. Vincent, Jack Antonoff, Taylor set. I bet it was crazy. I bet they were in that studio cooking.
Someone told me she wrote Top Line for that. So like the instrumental existed and she just wrote over it. I was like, that's interesting. I want to see.
Can we take a peek at it? Can we take a peek at it? No, we can't. So this was a good scene. You know, a lot of interesting things were said. Okay, period. Moving on. Andrea says, quote, I usually hear about new music within 5 minutes of it being written. That is the best thing that I can possibly think of, and also the scariest, because now I know something that nobody else knows, and that's a massive responsibility. She says, don't send it to me. I don't want it. I'd be the same. Don't put that on me. Do not put that evil on me, Ricky Bobby. I don't want it. I do not want it.
I'd be saying, give it to me. Gimme.
Imagine.
And I'd walk around with a bag that's locked like the nuclear codes that follows the president. I would walk around. Nobody would be getting it from me. Mm-mm.
Period. Well, period. It's
Madeline's
locked
giving it away for
like
free.
Fort Knox. I've done it before. Everybody knows this. I've given away the nuclear codes before. So whatever. I'm not a good secret keeper. There you go. Taylor says, I love being hyper detailed and having several overarching themes that are woven throughout. And I think the fans have really gotten into that obsessive nature of my storytelling too. But we're talking about Showgirl, you know?
Where are we seeing that on several overarching themes? Girl, shoes on home.
Let's go finding. Get you a home. Let's go get you a home.
Not so, a white refrigerator.
I if we were talking torture poets, I'd be like, say it louder, say it prouder. You know, say it with pride, but you know,
there are like maximum three things going on through Life of the Showgirl, three things.
And you know what? Fine, but let's not act like it's something that it isn't. That's kind of
like,
let's
tell the truth.
My one gripe about this scene is like, I mean, let's tell the truth. You know, that's not the truth, Ellen. Nonetheless,
you're forcing it.
We get a montage after this of fans covering Taylor's songs and fans talking about how much the lyrics mean to them. And Amos says one of the things that sets her apart from other people is how she writes. Her writing is personal and it's vulnerable and it's very specific. But in that specificity, people see themselves. People like Gracie Abrams. Cut to Gracie's all-time worst cover that she's ever done, aka her cover of All Too Well. Look.
Girls,
I like Gracie. She's a great girl. There's a lot of things that she does that I say, okay, great. But this cover, no.
It's beyond. It's beyond.
I walk through the door with you. No.
Mm-mm.
Don't. Mm-mm. I don't like
this
cover.
That's a Taylor song people just shouldn't cover as well. Just leave that
one
alone. No,
and especially not if you're going to do it like that. Like, I think you have to really
if you're
going to
do it bad,
I'm
especially
sorry.
Leave it alone.
Listen, I like Gracie. She's a cute girl. But this, I can't abide the All Too Well cover. I really can't. That's where I draw the line with her. But then she starts, you know, she starts acting right. Gracie says, every chapter of my life is marked by an album of Taylor's that came out around the same time. Same. And she tells this like little anecdote where she's like, oh, my friends used to ask me, would you rather have $10 trillion or write a song with Taylor? And I was always like, write with Taylor. The only thing I could think was, easy for you to say, J.J. Abrams' daughter.
I know. I had that thought too. I was like,
Gracie.
The thing is, Gracie, is that you would never be in this position if you weren't a Nepo baby. It just wouldn't.
Right. No.
It wouldn't be a reality for you. Sorry.
So that was the thought that crossed my mind. But nonetheless, Taylor and Gracie meet up to rehearse their mashup together. I liked Gracie's energy and excitement for it. She's very into it. She can't stop smiling. She's loving it. And Gracie says about Taylor, she is just the easiest person to be around. She's such a dear friend. I fucking love her. And then sometimes I'm like, how is it that we're singing this song? For me, this is like a dream. It's the appropriate attitude to have. It's
she really turns off the whole I'm Taylor Swift thing when she's with her friends. It's like really clear that she has no airs and graces. Everything is normal. Even when she's talking about things that aren't normal, it seems normal because of the way she talks about it.
Right.
It's so, I think that's why people are so like, oh! Like when she started singing Espresso and Sabrina was like, oh, you're singing my song. Taylor was like, over my head. We're equals.
Yeah. Come on. I love this song. I love this
song. Is it over now? You know that.
So cut to the show and we see Gracie under the stage. She's looking a little nervous, but she's been up on that stage before, so not too bad. And she gets up there and she starts doing her song. She's in her white dress. One thing about Gracie that I do have to say is that her sense of style confounds me. I think it's kind of like I'm thin, so I get away with it. And you know what? Good for her. Good
Gen
for
Z.
Her. Yeah.
It's Gen
it's
Z.
It's very... She marches to the beat of her own drum when it turned. I remember in London, I wish this could have gotten caught on camera. I remember thinking when I was seeing them down there, I was like, she looks like Willow from Buffy the Vampire Slayer. She had like a witch gown on. And normally I'm
which
into that
just looks
kind of
insane
thing.
Next to Taylor in her Eras outfits.
That's the thing. But nonetheless, so, you know, they're up there, they start singing. And Taylor says, there's something that happens between friends who make music. It's this kind of like undeniable bond that you have. With Gracie, we've had so many special moments. And we see one of those special moments when Taylor starts singing Out of the Woods. Gracie like bows down to her. It's a really cute moment. I love that moment. She's a cute girl.
As she should. As she should.
As she should. Taylor says, my opening acts on this tour are kids that were like 10 years old at my show. And now we're singing together. You just can't believe how everything's falling into place in a way you never could have dreamed it would. Period.
The difference in how Sabrina and Gracie are portrayed in the documentary is so funny to me because with Sabrina, it's like, oh, my equal, this incredible, huge pop star. And with Gracie Abrams, it's like, my little buddy. My friend.
She is a little buddy. You know what?
My
she
friend.
Is a little buddy. My little buddy. So Andrea says, I look forward to seeing the different ways that the fans react night to night. You see the tears and the hugging each other, and I love it. For me personally, watching the show, the moment that Taylor appears and there she is, that to me is absolutely worth everything. And after she says that, we see a montage of Andrea helping Taylor on stage as a kid.
Gag.
gag. It was absolutely beautiful. And I have to agree with her. That moment when Taylor first appears is the gag of the century.
It's everything. It's my favorite moment of every tour. And she has a really good sense of drama and occasion. And every entrance is always like unique and different from the last one. Like some of them are just so gaggy and memorable.
Yeah. And this one, maybe it's because
this is the best one.
Tour.
It's the best one. It is.
Absolutely strikes me. But I love them all. You think about the Red Tour entrance. She's never done something like that again. It's always different. Oh my God.
Sparks
fly. Like I'm being short circuit.
Swifty.
Swifty. Swifty. So, Andrea says, it makes me feel like this was my calling in life. Whether it was Taylor or my mom, it was to be around someone who loves entertaining and is extraordinarily talented. It just happened all over again. It certainly did. Very beautiful sentiment. And then we get into the scene about Marjorie, the song, being on the Eras Tour. And as Andrea is talking about it, she starts to tear up and she can't talk about it anymore. I was like, I can't do it. I'm out.
No,
I gotta quit.
Tears at this point.
And we get to see clips of Taylor from her Evermore Zane Lowe interview. Great interview, by the way. I always forget about it.
Horrible
whenever I see
sound
it, I'm
quality.
Like, yes, well, you know, with your pandemic, et cetera, et cetera. But great interview. Great interview. I remember I was so surprised that it happened. When it happened, I was like, damn, she's really talking
about one of her last
own
long-form interviews about the work.
Yeah,
like,
let's
just
open
the work.
That case
detailed.
Up again. Let's get back to that. But
she
nonetheless.
She couldn't do it for Showgirl because, you know, not much to talk about.
In this interview, Taylor says, the experience writing Marjorie was that I was kind of a wreck at times writing it. She died when I was 13, when I was on a trip to Nashville trying to make it. So I've always just sort of felt like she was just seeing this, you know? And I have to agree with the sentiment. They talk about how Marjorie is singing on the song, and we actually get to hear isolated vocals in the documentary of Marjorie singing, which like gave me the chills. I was like, oh, because I never heard them isolated like that before. They also turn them up. I believe this firmly. At the show, they are turned up.
Mm-hmm.
I'm telling you.
You hear her.
Every time I'm like, I can't. Every time I heard Marjorie, I thought it was over and I was going to have to be escorted out. I made it by the skin of my teeth every time.
I thought she would mention it in Singapore that her grandmother lived here, but she didn't mention it once, weirdly.
No, well, she was fighting for her life.
Yep. She was fighting for her life.
So Andrea says, I don't know if I can make it through this tour crying every night when you sing that song. It just gets me. It started off as something very simple. We didn't even have lights prepared for that song. We didn't know that the fans were going to honor that song with the reverence that they do. I honor it. I was
honored every
it.
Time. Madeline honored it more than most.
I was honoring it, and it took me by surprise every time it happened. I knew when we were in Chicago night one, I was like, it's over. I'm going to be fucked up over this, but I did not expect to be fucked up every single time. It just like, it doesn't get old. Like when you, especially
it got me in London,
the last time when we were up higher and you could see all the lights, I was like, I'm about to
tumble down these stairs and hit Paul McCartney.
It was just amazing. That's one of my favorite parts of like the whole show was Marjorie, which is kind of like interesting in retrospect, but you guys know I love the fucking Evermore set. I would give anything. If you could only have one part of the Eras Tour back, I want the original Evermore set back. That's what I would choose, sincerely.
I want Tis the Damn Season back. I went through my phone and finally found a good video of Tis the Damn Season, and I was like, thank you.
I need to look and see if I have one, because that's a really good point. I was on Instagram Reels earlier, and I stumbled upon a video where somebody was like, yeah, just so you know, Tis the Damn Season was on the Eras Tour. And I was like, oh my God, we're losing the text. There's people that don't know.
You don't need to tell me. We know.
There's people that don't know. I couldn't. Thank God. Thank God we saw it. That's all I have to say about that. And to people who didn't, you've been wronged. And we will be filing a small claim. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
So Mike Meadows talks about how Marjorie speaks to him every night because he lost his dad. Tamia talks about her papa passing away and how she thinks of him during the song. Camila talks about what it means to her because her mother passed away. And just having all these like back-to-back people talking about how much Marjorie meant to them. It's like, yes, the song is about Marjorie. And yes, this moment in the episode is about Marjorie. But it's really just about like grief and losing someone and that experience of feeling like that person can still sometimes be with you, and how Marjorie the song and like the performance of it and everybody honoring it in that way sort of really made that feeling come to life every single night on the Eras Tour for everybody who's ever lost somebody. I thought it was just very powerful. I loved hearing it.
And when you realize that her dream that she never got to fulfill was exactly what Taylor's doing, that just like adds a whole other layer of like depth and complexity to it.
Right. It's just absolutely beautiful. And again, Invisible String. Well,
that's a real fucking legacy.
Yeah, to leave. So Camila talks about how she lost her mother in September 2021. And when rehearsal started, she says not only did she need music and need to be with her band family, as she calls them, but she also needed to heal. Music is the thing that is most healing to me, she says. And for the last show in Toronto, Camila does the pre-show huddle, and she says, for the past few years, I've been learning to accept and lean into two different things can be true at one time. And last year, that really smacked me in the face because we started this tour and we were all making memories and falling in love with each other. And I was the happiest I had been in some time. And at the same time, I was heartbroken every moment because my mother wasn't here to experience this joy or see the Eras Tour. I just want to give permission to feel both, to be here, feel what we feel, and be as present as you can in these next four shows. I thought it was a beautiful, beautiful
this
speech
had
and a
me,
beautiful
like,
tribute.
Actually sobbing. This entire segment, I was in pieces.
And immediately after that beautiful speech, we go into the entirety, front to back, of Marjorie at the show. I don't care what anybody says.
As it
we
should.
We needed it. We needed it. I don't give a fuck.
When
we
the bridge
every
kicks
second
in,
of it.
The autumn chill that wakes it. No, it's over. It's over.
It's over. It's over. It's just so beautiful. And I really liked this performance, like as opposed to the performances that we have in HD in both of the tour movies now, because we get to see little moments of the crowd. We see Andrea miming the Marjorie signature, which almost put me in my tomb. We see Camila.
I love that.
Singing the hell out of it, like it's healing her. We see fan reactions to it in the audience. And when we hear Marjorie's voice, you know, singing opera in the stadium, we see Andrea getting to hear her mother sing in a stadium. And she says, my mom's voice is in that song. And she would have loved to have seen all of this. She'd be so proud. And I think she'd also be really stoked that she's now singing in a stadium every night. Music is power. Music is power.
Music. What is that thing that we always, that we said that people thought was so funny? It was like, art is, what is it? Art is meant to make you feel something. It's just said it very declaratively during
art
our Rob Sheffield
to make
episode.
You feel something. Yes, no, music is power.
Yeah.
And this is the music proof is power. Of it. This is the proof of it.
The Addison Rae tweet, I love music. I love music.
Yeah,
music
is power.
I love
music. Music is God. Music is power. Exactly. And this scene, I thought I wouldn't change anything about it. I don't care that maybe we don't need a third total HD performance of Marjorie. Yes, we do.
We did.
Yes, we do. This one's different.
In this moment,
it's different.
It's shot really differently powerful. Too.
Yeah. It was Gorgina. Absolutely Gorgina. And it felt more personal, like almost like you were there, as opposed to like when you watch the show in either version, it's like, oh, I'm watching a show, as opposed to in the documentary, it's like, I'm feeling this moment. I get to look around and see what everybody else is feeling. It's just absolutely beautiful. Wouldn't change it for $1 million. So after
That's
this, we get that moment where Taylor becomes overcome with emotion during the standing ovation. And she says, we're at the very end of this tour. So you doing that, cheering and clapping, you have no idea how much it means to me and to my band and to my crew and everyone who's put so much into this tour. And I'm just having a bit of a moment. I don't even know what I'm saying. I love you guys. Thank you so much for that. And she, you know, cries and just tries to move on. And after the show, she's upset and she's embarrassed that she did that. And she's telling her brother, Austin, in the car that she's embarrassed. And like Austin has to like console her and be like, no, it was the best part. It was incredible. I think it was just a moment in a show that she's never usually off script, where she was off script and she was like, I'm losing it. And it really just like made
she
her
also
think, like,
doesn't
oh.
She doesn't like to be emotionally vulnerable in that way in public. And this is why when people are like, she's crying on stage, and it's like a compilation of Taylor crying on stage over the years. It's like, girls, she just has watery eyes. So it always looks like she's crying a little bit, but she actually very, very rarely fully tears on her face, cries on stage. This is one of the only times.
Yeah. And it was, I remember it and I'll never forget it. And it was interesting to me to see how like embarrassed she was by it, how she had to be consoled. Cause I was like, man, everybody loved it. Austin's right. It was the best part. It was incredible. And everybody loved it. And everybody kind of like felt it in that moment. But Taylor says, you know, what got me was Camila's speech about her mother never getting to see the Eras Tour. It put it in perspective, the fact that mom did get to see it and Travis got to see it and dad got to see it. And I just felt so lucky. And that's what cracked me wide open. And mom
and
dad
were on the
phone. You
see how the grateful reframe will change your life?
No, it's attitude and outlook, ladies and gentlemen. Attitude and outlook. Mom and Dad were on the phone also telling her that she shouldn't be embarrassed. And Taylor says, I guess I just never thought we'd ever do something this good. And that's how the episode ends. And again, she's using the royal we. We did something this good. Thank you. It was a great episode. I liked it. I liked it a lot.
Beautiful episodes. I mean, bravissima, brava, gorgeous. For more of this, patreon.com/withologist and evolutionofasnake.com. Tickets to the Snares Tour. You need them.
They could be yours.
They could be yours. Only you can make that decision. So right. Get your ass up and come and see our really good thing that we do.